Lieutenant Commander Scott Benny of U.S. Navy Reserve, writing in the U.S. Naval Institute's website under the title The Perils of Energy Independence, and his views are his own and not those of USNI or of the United States Navy. Commander, thanks very much for your time today. Just the title of the piece is counterintuitive. How did you come to the idea of exploring the possibility of energy independence for the United States being potentially a bad idea? Thanks very much for your time today, sir.
Well, and thank you again, sir, for having me on. It was actually some reading that we had been doing through the Naval War College for the master's degree that I was working on. And it was actually some reading on an article from Georgetown University linking free trade and the war on terror. And it was this piece that kind of prompted me to think about possible energy independence in the future and how the economy and national security agreements with other nations are tied together. And if we become energy independent, like some experts say that we can in the, you know, possibly 2030, 2040, how that might affect us adversely, rather than the initial Blanche response, which most people would say that's positive, I kind of wanted to look at the other side of it, and it kind of prompted me to write this piece.
Some interesting potential issues here as well. You write, does complete American energy independence benefit Pacific Command in light of China's economic growth, rising consumption, and subsequent need to secure future energy resources and partnerships? What are the implications as you considered that question, Commander?
Well, the implications are potentially negative if it's not something that we address in other areas. If all of a sudden we're just energy independent in the year 2030 and we don't do something else to keep ourselves tied to some of those Middle East and North African countries that provide so much oil exportation to us right now. China is only growing, and their energy consumption is only growing along with it. And the economic arena being what it is, everybody's tied in one way or another. So if all of a sudden we cut ourselves off from those oil exporting nations, China is really going to be the one to benefit possibly from that, because they're only growing, and those economic ties and potentially future security partnerships could grow just because of that.
So the deeper implication is that the purchasing of oil for energy is not just a business transaction, but it's part of a broader national security and diplomatic relationship, and that relationship is hardened and matured by the ongoing back and forth, not just business-wise, but through the relationship that's established within that. Am I on track there, sir?
Yes, sir. And actually, that was basically kind of what I had mentioned earlier, that Georgetown paper. They talked about, post 9/11, the U.S. started looking for nations that would support them in their global war on terror. And this piece brought up, and one of the things that kind of inspired me to write this article, this piece brought up, you know, multiple nations that had free trade agreements that were in the works but weren't complete yet. And this article, linking free trade and the war on terror, basically posited that these free trade agreements were kind of either pushed through or finalized more quickly than they normally would have been in conjunction with the support from these nations. And one of the nations that, you know, this article brought up that didn't support the U.S. in its global war on terror still doesn't have a free trade agreement with us to this day. And so that's one of those things that something like that has happened in the past. So it kind of shows a little bit of a pattern that the U.S. has done on the international arena. So why wouldn't other nations act similarly in the future?
You write, Commander, about the growing influence of China in different parts of the world, not just in the Asia theater of operation. You write about Sudan, Turkey, Egypt, Pakistan, Iran, and Iraq. And you write, as a consequence, U.S. partnerships with China's much smaller neighbors must be maintained with the greatest of care. We've seen that with President Obama trying to build our relationships and strengthen our relationships with countries in that theater of operations. What is the thing to consider from an energy perspective, from an energy independence perspective, as we look at that part of the world and how we build those relationships, given that they're not huge sources of energy for us right now?
Well, really what it comes down to in that arena is kind of the power that China has in its own backyard. If, for us as the U.S., if while a lot of those smaller nations in the Asian theater, the Asian Pacific theater, they don't provide us a lot of energy resources. But if China all of a sudden has the majority of the economic ties with oil exporting nations, and we're still reliant on China via, you know, importing their own Asian goods, we're still tied to a lot of that. And so if China all of a sudden is the big kid on the block and they have all that international negotiating strength, and the U.S. has a lot less because we're just tied to those a lot of those larger nations less economically, that affects us in multiple areas and not just in the energy economic negotiations arena, but also with security partnerships in these smaller countries. So these smaller countries right now, they have to kind of keep one foot on each side of the fence, trying to be friends with China, stay friendly there, but they also, a lot of them want to continue their security partnerships with the U.S., and if we continue to kind of shrink economically and with our security partnerships, that kind of trust of the U.S. security umbrella might, you know, dissipate and thus decrease a lot of our influence that we have in areas like that.
Lieutenant Commander Scott Benny of the United States Navy Reserve, writing for the U.S. Naval Institute under the title The Perils of Energy Independence, and his views are his own, not those of the Naval Institute or the United States Navy. You write about a potential scenario that could play out, sir. An unlikely but ideal scenario would be U.S. maintenance of economic ties with Middle East and North African oil exporting nations while gaining its own energy independence. At some point, would that potentially put the United States, do you think, in the position of being an energy broker for the entire world? Because what we see from the fracking boom across the country is there's no shortage of energy available within the borders of the United States.
That's definitely a possibility, sir. And actually, one of the kind of converse arguments I had brought up, just to kind of show both sides of the coin, and a lot of experts, you know, the Center on Global Energy Policy states that lifting our own energy bans, you know, we don't export a lot of our own natural resources, lifting that ban, you know, would actually provide us more strength on the international arena and negotiating strength and put kind of downward pressure on the prices for Americans and let us, the U.S., actually have more of a say on international energy prices. But right now that's not the case since that ban is still in place. But if we're able to maintain those ties with Middle East and North African countries, you know, while ideally gaining some sort of our own independence, we could, you know, that could be a significant step forward for us on the international arena.
And as far as looking forward, you suggest a very long-term view. You write, if it's to stay ahead of the shifting winds of the global economy, the United States needs to be looking a century over the horizon and figuring out how to maintain economic interdependence with the Middle East while managing a growing China. That's quite a balance to walk. Do we have any sense of what that might look like, or is that scenario, is that time frame so long term that it's really hard to attach concepts to it right now, sir?
It's pretty difficult to attach concepts to it right now, but it's something that I brought up at the end of my paper because through our studies in the War College, one of the things that we kind of continually brought up is how good China is at looking decades down the line rather than, you know, via their next elections, because they don't have them as often as obviously as we do. And so they seem to be much more proficient at looking 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the future. And I was just basically stating that the U.S. needs to kind of get in that practice a little bit more and be looking even further down the line if we're going to maintain the kind of global presence and, you know, dominance and security and energy partnerships and the global economy if we want to maintain that.